Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and in the next half-hour segment, we're going to continue with a line of discussion that we've been engaged in for a couple of months now, as I speak, in late October of 1998. I've been accessing both the work of a very fine man named Mike Rupert, a former LAPD narcotics detective who has worked tirelessly and selflessly to help expose those elements of our intelligence community that have been involved in drug trafficking. And in turn, Mike Rupert, in his very fine From the Wilderness newsletter, has been accessing a remarkable story which has had very little coverage, in fact, almost none, namely a lawsuit that has been filed on behalf of a former Green Beret named Bill Tyree, last name T-Y-R-E-E. Bill Tyree was allegedly involved in a CIA operation called Operation Watchtower, in which Tyree and other Special Forces soldiers allegedly were requisitioned in order to place electronic beacons in the jungles of Colombia in order to guide drug-carrying planes into Panama for transshipment to the United States on behalf of elements of U.S. intelligence. There appears to have been a possible Mossad connection to this same operation, and at the very core of the operation were two, quote, ex-unquote CIA operatives named Edwin Wilson and Frank Turpel, whom I've discussed at great length in numerous programs, including RFA program number 4, available from Spitfire, entitled Wilson, Turpel and Company. The Special Forces operatives allegedly involved in Operation Watchtower were also involved in something even more insidious, something that they nicknamed Operation Orwell. Operation Orwell allegedly was an operation in which political operatives, law enforcement figures, religious figures, and even some institutions such as the Catholic Church and the Church of Latter-day Saints were spied upon in an effort to see to it that they did not interdict the drug traffic that was being generated, allegedly, as a result of Operation Watchtower. By the way, I use the term allegedly because I'm not in a position to directly confirm the existence of these allegations. I definitely believe that there is wheat in this particular journalistic harvest. Whether or not there turns out to be some chaff has yet to be determined. But simply as a matter of methodology, I'm a reporter and an analyst, not an investigator, so I'm not in a position to confirm firsthand the allegations made in the documents I'm about to read. Nonetheless, there appears to be a substantive amount of truth in this, and I believe that the suit is a vitally important suit. But again, I'm not in a position to verify firsthand any of the allegations made here, nor do I have any information myself that would incriminate any of the people involved in these discussions, nor do any of the stations that carry this broadcast. And again, that should not be misinterpreted as casting aspersions on the information I'm about to present, but this is simply as a matter of intellectual and legal honesty. One of the figures that crops up in connection with the operations, namely the alleged operations Watchtower and Orwell, and also the activities that Bill Tyree was allegedly involved in, was a remarkable figure named Albert Vincent Caron, who appears, from the information presented in past broadcasts, to have worn numerous hats, including those of a United States Army colonel, an operative on behalf of the Central Intelligence Agency. He also worked in conjunction with the Mafia as well. And apparently his efforts on behalf of all three institutions overlap to a considerable extent. The lawsuit that was filed on behalf of Bill Tyree names, among others, George Bush, Oliver North, Bill Clinton, and also the Central Intelligence Agency as defendants, as well as a number of current and past Massachusetts state officials. Again, let me stress that I'm not in a position to corroborate firsthand the information presented in the Cutolo affidavit or in the various filings that have been presented already in connection with this lawsuit. However, in an A&E documentary that was aired in June of 1998, the judge in Bill Tyree's murder trial said on camera that he believes him to be innocent. When Elaine Tyree, Bill Tyree's wife, who was also in the Army, began keeping a diary and functioning as an informant for the Army's CID, the Criminal Investigations Division, she was murdered and Bill Tyree was framed for her murder. And again, Judge Killiam, who overheard Tyree's case, stated on camera that he believes Tyree to be innocent. One of the factors that has convinced me that although there may be some chaff in this particular informational harvest, there certainly is a lot of wheat, and that concerns the number of untimely deaths of former Green Beret colonels, U.S. intelligence operatives, and others who either had participated in and or were investigating Operations Watchtower and Orwell. Now, we should note that these are individuals who are in an ordinarily excellent state of health, and simply from an actuarial standpoint, it would appear to be all but impossible for these people to have died under the circumstances of coincidence, as we would have, officialdom would have us believe. One of the factors that argues most strongly on behalf of the argument that there is a great deal of substance to the information, to the allegations presented by Bill Tyree's counsel in the Cutolo affidavit and in other documents, is the fact that so many people have died, apparently as an effort to interdict the investigations of these allegations. I'm going to begin by reading an introductory document to the Cutolo affidavit. This was authored by a former National Security Agency operative named Paul Neary, N-E-R-I. And in turn, Neary's observations, Neary died of cancer in 1989, specifically on, actually it was on April 29th of 1990. And his discussion of the Cutolo affidavit was mailed to former Lieutenant Colonel Bo Greitz, this in turn was mailed by the mother of a former of a Vietnam POW and MIA, and it was later Mike Rupert, rather the aforementioned Mike Rupert, was later introduced to Bo Greitz by Mrs. Frances Gary Powers, or Sue Powers, the widow of Francis Gary Powers, the U-2 pilot, who was involved in the very famous 1959 shootdown. I want to stress that I do not hold a brief for the political milieu that Bo Greitz has kept company with, nor does Mike Rupert, nor do any of the principals involved in this suit. However, Bo Greitz has certainly been a tireless worker on behalf of attempts to expose elements of the intelligence community who have been involved in the drug traffic. Again, I do not hold a brief for his political associates, nor does Mike Rupert or others, but even Gary Webb in his excellent Dark Alliance book has tipped his hat to Bo Greitz in that context. However, I do not want some of his white supremacist associations and his association with people associated with the Liberty Lobby to be allowed to cast aspersions on the very important information that is contained in the Cutolo affidavit and the introductory letter drawn from the work of the late Paul Neary. And again, Paul Neary's name is spelled N-E-R-I. I'm going to begin the discussion by reading the introduction to this Neary document, this Neary commentary on the Cutolo affidavit. This introduction was made by Mike Rupert, who has been accessing the Cutolo affidavit on his website. Mike begins, Ed Cutolo did not write the Cutolo affidavit. By the way, Cutolo is C-U-T-O-L-O with a capital C. My primary reason for saying this is that he refers to the Panamanian Defense Forces, or PDF, which were not so named until several years after his death. The Cutolo affidavit remains, however, substantially corroborated as to its factual statements by affidavits from other Special Forces personnel and documents obtained in the case of Bill Tyree and through the Freedom of Information Act. I have spoken to and corresponded with Bill Tyree on many occasions. I find him to be coherent and credible, and as a detective, I would have no reservation about recommending him as a witness to any district attorney. There is no doubt in my mind that an innocent man has been in prison for more than 18 years for the murder of his own wife, which he did not commit. In my efforts to corroborate the Cutolo affidavit, I did make contact with an employee of the National Security Agency who verified the existence, death, and cause of death of Paul Neary. Based upon information received from several sources, including Green Beret, it is my belief that the Cutolo affidavit was written after Ed's death, based upon material contained in a doomsday file which he had secreted with person or persons inside NSA. It is also my belief that this file still exists. I find it very interesting the ambivalence regarding George Bush, who coincidentally was director of Central Intelligence when Teddy, that's Mike Rupert's ex-fiancé, who was allegedly in the Central Intelligence Agency and tried to recruit Mike into that, and then Mike, as a result of that, came across, by his account, CIA involvement in drug trafficking. Beginning again, I find very interesting the ambivalence regarding George Bush, who coincidentally was director of Central Intelligence when Teddy first tried to recruit me and when the Watchtower missions occurred. I also am impressed by the coincidence of the dates of the Orwell missions with the burglaries, threats, and surveillances which I experienced in 1978, just before I was forced to resign. I came into possession of the Cutillo affidavit in the spring of 1992 while I was serving as the press spokesman for the Perot campaign in Los Angeles County. It came from Jean Ray, the mother of a Vietnam POW MIA, who had received it from Lieutenant Colonel Bo Greitz. I was later introduced to Greitz by Mrs. Francis Gary Sue Powers, and Greitz told me that the material in the affidavit was ironclad. Even if you discount Greitz as corroboration, the supporting affidavits and documents tell the story completely. No other amplification is necessary. Now, due to the limitations of time, I do not have time to even begin to do justice to all of the other documentation that is contained in the Cutillo affidavit, but the introductory letter here and a summation of some of the key events by Paul Neary touches on one of the factors that I believe argues most strongly for the bulk of substantive truth that I believe to be contained in the allegations made by Bill Tyree and his milieu. Note the number of deaths of key people in this situation. And in the letter, in an introduction of the letter, we read, Mr. Paul Neary of the National Security Agency died on April 29, 1990. Before his death, he requested that I mail the enclosed affidavit to you. Paul Neary was concerned that he would be killed or lose his security clearance if he revealed the affidavit before he died. According to him, these facts are true. And then I proceed with the account. And this is, again, addressed to Colonel Bo Greitz, and with the caveat that I touched on earlier. Proceeding. Several years ago, Colonel Cutillo obligated me to bring the enclosed affidavit forward in the event of his death. In 1980, Colonel Cutillo died in an accident while on a military exercise. By the way, I would note parenthetically, that's one death. Continuing. Just prior to his death, he notified me that he was to meet with Michael Harari, an Israeli Mossad agent. It is my belief, though unsubstantiated, that Harari murdered Colonel Cutillo because of the information Colonel Cutillo possessed. And I would stress that a lot of people have died in connection with this case, whether or not the allegation that Harari was the murderer has any substance or not. Harari certainly does appear to have been involved in this chain of events in some capacity. Continuing. In the event of Colonel Cutolo's death, I was told to directly contact Colonel Baker, which I did. I believe that Colonel Cutillo died in his attempt to prove that Operation Watchtower was not sanctioned by the proper authorities. By the way, I would add parenthetically, I believe that this operation was sanctioned by some of the, quote, proper authorities, unquote, although it does raise some very profound constitutional questions as to who the proper authorities are. Continuing, Colonel Baker enlisted the aid of Colonel Nick Rowe, and between Colonel Baker, Colonel Rowe, and myself, we set out to prove that Harari murdered Colonel Cutillo and that Operation Watchtower was an unsanctioned illegal operation which netted Edwin Wilson and Frank Turple of the CIA a large sum of tax-free dollars. Again, as I indicated in RFA number 4, I believe that a profoundly significant element of U.S. intelligence did sanction the various operations of Turple and Wilson, whether it was CIA, NSA, DIA, or whoever. Somebody sure sanctioned them, and it was somebody in a position of great, great power, and I would look in the direction of George Bush and others. Continuing. Colonel Baker enlisted the aid of Colonel Nick Rowe, and between Colonel Baker, Colonel Rowe, and myself, we set out to prove that Harari murdered Colonel Cutillo and that Operation Watchtower was an unsanctioned illegal operation which netted Edwin Wilson and Frank Turple of the CIA a large sum of tax-free dollars. Prior to getting very far into the investigation, Colonel Baker died while in command of 1st Battalion, 10th Special Forces Group. By the way, that's the second death. Continuing, Colonel Baker did live long enough to see Edwin Wilson arrested for trafficking arms to Libya. The Libyan situation has two sides to it. First, Wilson claimed top CIA officials approached him to go to Libya under the guise of trafficking arms, while in actuality gathering intelligence. In this situation, active duty special forces at Fort Bragg were approached by Wilson to go to Libya to train troops. The special forces verified the fact that Wilson was with the CIA and went along. The second side was the prosecution's theory of the events at Wilson's trial. The prosecution contended that Wilson didn't work for the CIA and duped the special forces personnel into helping him. Wilson was convicted and is currently in the federal prison at Marion, Illinois, as I'm sure you are aware. One of the CIA officials Wilson claims was involved in the Libyan situation was Thomas Kleins. Thomas Kleins is named in Colonel Cutillo's affidavit by Wilson as being in charge of Operation Watchtower. Thomas Kleins recently was named in the Iran-Contra affair for his failure to declare monies earned in that affair. Colonel Baker, Colonel Rowe, and myself concluded after failing to verify through various intelligence contacts the existence of Operation Watchtower that the operation was run entirely on the authority of Thomas Kleins, Edwin Wilson, and Frank Turple. By the way, I believe there was far more than that involved in this operation, expressing my opinion here, and I think that's one of the reasons that the mortality rate was so very, very high. This thing went very, very, very close to the top, if not right to the top. Continuing. A pattern emerged from the Libyan situation in which Kleins, Wilson, and Turple were involved that was identical to Operation Watchtower. The similarities we noted were, 1. Thomas Kleins named a CIA agent in charge but behind the scenes. 2. Wilson as the front man running the operations. 3. Unauthorized use of U.S. military personnel to implement both of the operations. 4. Large sums of money involved either relating to arms or to drug trafficking. 5. U.S. interests don't appear to have been served by either operation. Considering these similarities and the most recent issue of Klein's involvement in withholding taxes stemming from the Iran-Contra affair, the possibility of Edwin Wilson being sent to Libya as he claimed to gather intelligence is very possible. Suppose Wilson, Kleins, and Turple were separately involved in Operation Watchtower, as Colonel Cutolo's affidavit sets out. Wilson would not have hesitated to go to Libya for Kleins if Wilson thought it was sanctioned by the company. At the same time, if Kleins was trying to erase all ties to Operation Watchtower and Wilson, there would never have been a better opportunity for Kleins to rid himself of the connection than by sending Wilson on an unsanctioned mission to Libya. It's also interesting to note that Frank Turple, who played a minor role in Operation Watchtower and who was involved in the Libyan situation, is still at large but sought by the U.S. authorities. It's possible that Turple helped Kleins set up Wilson. Wilson claimed during his trial that Kleins had a debt to Wilson in excess of $1 million. Where did Wilson or Kleins earn that amount of money legally? It presents a substantial motive for Kleins to set Wilson up, aside from the motive of keeping Operation Watchtower a secret. So the story of Edwin Wilson was reviewed by us. We were left with doubts as to his guilt in the Libyan situation. We had no doubt as to the guilt of Thomas Kleins, who we suspect was the mastermind behind Operation Watchtower. I would interject, I suspect that it went higher than Thomas Kleins, but that, of course, is an opinion. Continuing. After Colonel Baker died, Colonel Rowe and I located Hugh B. Pierce, P-E-A-R-C-E, named in Colonel Cutolo's affidavit. Pierce was then assigned to the Air National Guard in Wilmington, Delaware. Chief Warrant Officer Pierce verified that Colonel Cutolo had given him a copy of the affidavit Colonel Cutolo had written. Mr. Pierce verified that Colonel Cutolo had openly discussed the entire affidavit with him. We never established how Mr. Pierce and Colonel Cutolo became acquainted. Mr. Pierce also verified that Colonel Cutolo was due to meet Michael Harari in England just prior to Colonel Cutolo's death. Mr. Pierce told us that Colonel Cutolo referred to Pierce as his, quote, ace in the hole, unquote. We never established what that meant. Mr. Pierce did refer Colonel Rowe to an address at Camp Shelby, Mississippi, and the name of Larkin Smith. Smith turned out to be a state politician, and Colonel Rowe and I made plans to discreetly meet with him in the latter part of 1989. On April 21, 1989, within 3 weeks of our communication with Smith, Colonel Rowe, who had been assigned to the Philippines, was assassinated. That, I would interject, is death number 3. Continuing. It's interesting to note that although authorities in the Philippines arrested a person with communist ties and beliefs and charged him with the murder of Colonel Rowe, Michael Harari was in the Philippines for 3 days just prior to and after Colonel Rowe's murder. Skipping down. In June 1989, Mr. Pierce, that's Hugh B. Pierce, was killed in a helicopter accident. The accident has a story of its own, I was told. That, by the way, is death number 4. Continuing. Both Colonel Rowe and Mr. Pierce agreed to go public after the meeting with Larkin Smith to call for a full investigation into the events described in Colonel Cutolo's affidavit. But both men died prior to the meeting with Smith. On August 13, 1989, Larkin Smith died in an airplane accident. Whatever he knew, I assume, died with him. That's 5, by the way. Colonels Baker, Rowe, Cutolo, Hugh Pierce, and Larkin Smith so far. Continuing. Colonel Rowe did verify most of the information that is written in Colonel Cutolo's affidavit, which relates to the murder of Elaine Tyree. Colonel Rowe's last message to me was to remain silent unless he was killed. Colonel Rowe said if something happened to him, to find you or Colonel Charles Beckwith. Colonel Rowe stated that you had made it known that you were told about the U.S. government facilitating the drug flow out of the Orient. Colonel Rowe said that you would believe myself and Colonel Cutolo's affidavit before Colonel Beckwith would. Colonel Rowe was skeptical of the whole matter until he spoke to Colonel Baker, Mr. Pierce, and William Tyree, who was incarcerated in Walpole Prison, Walpole, Massachusetts. After speaking to Tyree, Colonel Rowe received documentation from Tyree, which prompted Colonel Rowe to make inquiries up to the time of his death. I never reviewed the material Tyree sent to Colonel Rowe, so I cannot comment on it. Colonel Rowe decided I should stay out of the spotlight and act as an anchor to alert you if anything happened to him. I have not contacted you prior to now because I am very ill and wanted my final days free of intrigue which this matter presents. On my death, which I understand could be soon, I have left this letter, the affidavit, and instructions with an NSA co-worker. This person will find you if you are still alive when I die. If you're dead, she will locate Colonel Beckwith. If you're both dead, only the affidavit signed by Colonel Cutolo will be sent to the major newspapers. Under no circumstances will this letter be sent to the newspapers. There are several suggestions and footnotes to this entire matter. And skipping down, with the recent invasion of Panama and arrest of Mr. Noriega, Operation Watchtower assumes a new reason to be made public and investigated. It is clear from Colonel Cutolo's affidavit that George Bush knew or should have known about Operation Watchtower. With Mr. Noriega no longer in power, the Bush administration has helped install one president and two vice presidents in Panama who will continue to launder the drug money the CIA receives from drug operations worldwide as described in Colonel Cutolo's affidavit. How much longer and how many more will be murdered, die accidentally, or discredited through incarceration so that the poppies and coca leaves can fund the secret war of the CIA? Will Latin America be the next secret CIA war as was the case in Vietnam? And how many of our service people will die fighting there? The final note to the entire matter of Operation Watchtower is speculation. Colonel Baker, Colonel Rowe, and I believe that Thomas Kleins, with the aid of Edwin Wilson and Frank Turple, orchestrated Operation Watchtower outside the sanctioned, quote, loop, unquote, of the U.S. military and intelligence community at large, but with full CIA auspices. We believe Operation Watchtower was in part, if not in full, run on the authority of Task Force 157, which Wilson was in charge of. That, by the way, was an elite naval intelligence task force, which, among other things, oversaw some of the operations of the Nugenhand Bank. Task Force 157 is discussed at considerable length in both RFA number 4 and the Nugenhand Bank aspects of that in RFA program number 25, both of those available from Spitfire. Continuing. Colonel Rowe discreetly inquired about the mission of Task Force 157 in February of 1989 and the exact role of Wilson in Task Force 157. Skipping down, Colonel Rowe told me in our last telephone conversation that he would be receiving the documentation necessary to show that Wilson and Harari had known each other. After that call, Colonel Rowe was murdered. And skipping down, worst-case scenario is that there are three Army colonels named in Colonel Cutolo's affidavit aside from Colonel Cutolo who are now dead. Is there a connection? Did Harari and Wilson meet the planes in Panama after they flew out of Colombia with cocaine? Did Klein set Wilson up in the Libyan situation to cut Wilson out of the million-dollar profit accumulated from Operation Watchtower? To the best of my knowledge, Colonel Rowe learned that, other than William Tyree, there were only two other soldiers who may have knowledge of Operation Watchtower. Colonel Rowe learned what he did outside regular channels, so I don't know the name of the other two soldiers or where their names came from. It's possible that that was the information Larkin Smith retained. It all fits. This entire scenario carried over from Operation Watchtower directly into the Iran-Contra affair with the same characters. For your information, a copy of the affidavit will be sent to the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the Boston Globe. This is in the event you desire to go forward to the press with your own statement and facts that you may find while investigating Colonel Cutolo's affidavit. The men who have died so far that worked on this project were good men. It can't be proven that their deaths were the direct result of their involvement in this project, but I believe we owe it to them to investigate this matter and establish the true reason they were killed. They attempted to let the public know what really occurred in Latin America, and in the never-ending drug flow. I'm sorry that I am unable to carry the work any further. This is now your Pandora's box. I leave it in your hands. I have instructed the affidavit to be sent to the newspapers. Hopefully, this will help you get it out in the open and investigate it if you so choose. I'm sure that Colonel Rowe would not have referred me to you or Colonel Beckwith unless he was sure that you would do your best with getting this information into the open. Good luck, Paul Neary. And again, Paul Neary, an officer of the National Security Agency, died on April 29th, 1990. So one might perhaps view that as yet a sixth death. There's also a Colonel Robert Byard who died in this, in connection with this as well. Other deaths, too, that are not discussed in this. But again, in terms of separating the journalistic wheat from any possible journalistic chaff that might be in this investigation, one of the things that argues most strongly for the substantive accuracy of the allegations that have been made are this extraordinary mortality in connection with the case. Again, these are active-duty Army officers. They're in good physical condition, and they're not people you would expect, simply from the standpoint of statistical probability, to buy the farm under these circumstances. I alluded earlier to Spitfire. That's a tape duplication service that stocks the various tapes that I've produced over the years. Spitfire can be contacted at P.O. Box 1179. That's Post Office Box 1179. That's in Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip code 95005. Once again, the regular mailing address is P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip code 95005. The email address for Spitfire is spitfire@ix.netcom.com. That's spitfire@ix.netcom.com. I get a small royalty from the sale of the archive shows only. I get no monies from recent, present, or future on-air endeavors. There's a partial list of the tapes available from Spitfire on the Spitfire section of the KFJC webpage. KFJC is my home base station in the South San Francisco Bay Area. Point your web browser at www.kfjc.org. That's www.kfjc.org, and look in the public affairs section. The website crashed in the spring of 1998, and I'm still in the process of rebuilding it, so it has only been partially restored, but there's a partial list of the tapes available from Spitfire on that webpage. That concludes this segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.